Hello, strong, feisty women. Some of you may recognize my voice. I'm Celine Yeager, host of the Hit Play Not Pause podcast. Throughout my career as a professional health and fitness writer and now a podcaster, I hear countless questions from women who are trying to understand how their ever-changing hormones impact their sports performance. So we decided to serve up some answers in a brand new series called Hormonal that we will be releasing on the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast feed. Throughout this four-part series, reproductive endocrinologist Dr. Carla DiGirolamo and I will be tackling topics like periods, the pill, pregnancy, and conditions like PCOS, all from the perspective of sports performance. If you aren't already, follow the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast and stay tuned for our first episode releasing on April 15th. Also, have questions you want answered? Send us a voice note at speakpipe.com/hormonal and we'll get it answered on the show.
Welcome to the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Gross, Ironman champion, PhD in women's history, and founder and CEO of Feisty Media. I started this show because I wanted to cut through the BS of diet culture and fitness culture and actually learn from high-achieving women at the top of their game who have figured out how to feel and perform their best at every stage of life. So I chat with experts, elite athletes, and leaders who have learned to succeed despite the massive gender data gap in exercise and medical science and product development. Every episode is filled with information, advice, and anecdotes that will help you fulfill your potential as an athlete, mom, leader, or business owner. And listen up, if you don't subscribe to our Women's Performance newsletter, you are definitely missing out. It's totally free. So head over to womensperformance.com and subscribe now. That's womensperformance.com. This podcast is a production of Feisty Media. Feisty friends, thank you so much for listening to the Women's Performance Podcast. I'm Sarah Gross. Today's episode ranks as one of my fave conversations of all time. I was incredibly inspired by Vicky Anstey. Her story is one of wild bravery and self-knowledge. On paper, I would call her an adventurer, but her true wisdom comes from her own internal journey and ability to understand her strengths, her emotions, and those of others. After 20 years in a relationship that limited and stifled her, this former advertising professional turned bar fitness pioneer and entrepreneur became one of the first women to participate in the UK's SAS Who Dares Wins reality TV show at age 41. And she reached the final stages after 11 days in extreme conditions at altitude in Chile. Then, in 2021, Vicky and two other women, the Girls Who Dare, set a world record for rowing unaided across the Pacific Ocean. It took them 60 days, 17 hours, and 6 minutes. And if that wasn't enough, Vicky then took on a 5-day race in one of the coldest, most remote parts of the world, the Arctic, covering a distance of over 230 kilometers in temperatures of minus 35 degrees and carrying everything she needed to survive. Now Vicky is preparing for the Race Across America, known as RAM, which covers 3,000 miles across 17 states by bike. Vicky and I talk in depth about what she's learned through a life of adventure and what can happen when you leave a situation that is holding you back and start betting on yourself.
Hi, Vicky. Welcome to the Women's Performance Podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I'm very excited to talk to you. I've been trying over the last couple of days to get a grasp on your story, you know, from executive to bar studio owner into this adventure racing direction. It sounds like you have a pretty wild and incredible story, but let's start at the beginning.
Like, yeah, it definitely hasn't been linear, that's for sure. So you're forgiven for like struggling to keep up with all the changes that I've made in my life. But
exactly. And I'm sure you've learned a ton. You were a marketing executive?
Yeah, so I started out my professional career in advertising, and I worked agency side, and then not necessarily towards the end of my career, but you know, at a certain point, I then switched to client side and headed up some pretty big media and production budgets for firstly IKEA and then Eurostar. Don't know if you're familiar with Eurostar, which is a high speed train that takes Londoners to Paris.
cool.
And yeah, so that was kind of my life and my world, and I loved it. And my learning curve was almost vertical. I got some really lucky breaks and worked really, really hard, as you kind of have to do in the world of advertising to get anywhere. Mm-hmm. I sort of found myself at the age of, you know, 25, 26, kind of at the top of my game, really, but very burnt out, and starting to kind of question what was the value in what I was doing. I think I just, even at that relatively early age, kind of had a bit of an epiphany about how I wanted to kind of continue the rest of my professional career, and you know, had a real deep sense of dissatisfaction at that time. The part that surprises people the most is that I was not in any way active.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'd kind of done sports at school because you have to. I had not done any sports at university. I wasn't really very active at all. I wasn't eating particularly well, lots of late nights. I smoked, I drank too much. You know, it's quite a hedonistic kind of lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And as we do as human beings, you kind of go with the herd. And I guess I kind of was in this place where I wanted to do something different. But my first thought was absolutely not to go into fitness. It was only really because somebody that I was working with said, oh, I found this new workout and it's like exercising without exercising. And I was like, oh my God, sign me up.
That was the appeal. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it was bar. Mm-hmm. And it was, in fact, the precursor to bar, which is mm-hmm. called Lottie Burke, which you might recall it was far more well known in the US, certainly in New York anyway, than in the UK. And I started attending these classes. So it's basically like the sort of strength and conditioning of ballet. I'd never done ballet before in my whole life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was sort of a bit like, what am I actually doing here? But it was so strangely addictive and therapeutic. And it really started to kind of transform my physique as well. And I just loved it. And it was a great escape from a work life that at that time I really just wasn't enjoying. And I started to think, like, why don't more people not know about this in the UK? And I took a few trips out to New York, where bar is huge. It's like Pilates and yoga is over here in the UK. And I just thought, like, we could embrace this. Mm-hmm. I am one of those people that if I take something on, I do it at full steam. And and I just kind of went headlong into it a little bit with like my advertising hat on, thinking this is a huge business opportunity as well, you know, because it is so little known, and if it can make such a huge difference to someone like me, then, you know, that could apply to vast numbers of others. And yeah, so then I quit my career in advertising and I started to train in bar, and I spent many, many weeks and months in New York at different stages doing you know, every conceivable version of bar training that I could do.
Like, so you were to be a coach at first, yeah. Right? Like, yeah. This is the training. Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, mm-hmm. and that training wasn't available in the UK.
Right.
And you know, and then I started going to every single bar studio that I could find in New York. And in fact, anywhere that I went, I'd seek out a bar studio. So I've done bar in Bermuda and Paris and various different places. And so I started to kind of create this vision of how I wanted to teach it in the UK. And I took a huge risk and borrowed some money from my dad and set up the very first bar studio in the UK.
I'm just going to interrupt for one sec. I do want to hear the rest of the story. But what's so interesting to me is like, what is it that made you follow your instincts in that moment? Like you're in your 20s, you have this great career, presumably you're making some money, right? Yeah. Like you're kind of ahead of the curve. And yet you're like, oh, and then you go down this road into bar where you're willing to travel to New York and all these places to learn about it. How did you learn to follow that instinct?
Do you know, I think it's something that I've only really looked back on at a later stage in my life, because at that time I was married and I was in a relationship that was very limiting and quite coercive. And I didn't really realize that at the time. I think there are a lot of situations that we can get ourselves into that in that time and place we don't really fully assess.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And yet I am a huge advocate for listening to your gut. And I think sometimes opportunities present themselves in life in a sort of single moment. And, you know, there have been times in my life where I've taken advantage of those single moments. And I think that there are other times in life where situations just bubble away under the surface for a really, really long period of time. And we put up with things and we go along with things and we lose our sense of self and independence and our perspective sometimes. And, you know, so I definitely had this kind of, it's a really, really insightful question, actually. So I definitely had this kind of duality in my life. Mm. And, you know, that's the funny thing, isn't it? Because you can appear to other people to be thriving and to be confident and to be someone who's capable of making these kind of slightly outlandish, risky decisions. And yet there can be other elements of your life that don't fit into those categories at all and are actually quite at odds with that. But I think there's something that I have looked back on in my life when I sort of try to draw, you know, connect the dots and look at patterns that are repeated. And I think I have always had this kind of instinct to back myself and this urge to listen to my instincts. You know, I even remember when I worked in advertising, I was responsible for making some pretty big decisions on huge campaigns that were going out on national TV, cinema, radio, outdoor. And, you know, very often my gut reaction to, a creative presentation is what I would base my decision on. Mm-hmm. And I gained confidence in doing that professionally because time and time again, it worked and those campaigns were really successful. And yet in my personal life, I was ignoring all of those signals.
Right.
So yeah, I think it's interesting. And I think to me, that's a reminder perhaps to everybody that, you know, the people that you think are out there kind of trailblazing and being sort of super confident, you know, they may also have other stuff going on that just doesn't align with that. And that was definitely true for me. So, so I followed that dream and I set up my studio. And, you know, my ex-husband, who's my husband at the time, made it quite clear that I was really just kind of the face of the business and that he was really handling everything, you know, behind the scenes. And this was terribly complicated and that I wouldn't possibly have a notion of how to handle that myself.
Right.
And, you know, so there I was kind of dealing with, you know, hundreds of clients every week, introducing this new methodology to, you know, largely women in their kind of 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, who were absolutely hooked. I mean, it really just kind of, it just took me by such surprise, the success overnight. And yet I didn't really feel like I was running the business at all. But it was a huge success. And I ran that business for 12 years.
You were running the business. Yeah.
I mean, I was. Yeah. And I can see that now. But, you know, it's amazing. Again, just hindsight, you can look back at times in your life and just think, what was I thinking? Why did I let myself believe that? Why did I live up to this narrative of myself? Yeah. Why did I allow my wings to be clipped? And, you know, but that's in the past and you can't change it. And it's all part of my story, essentially. You know, I wouldn't be doing the things that I'm doing now if that hadn't been the way that, you know, for a part of my life, mm-hmm. That I lived. So, so I had, you know, a whole team of instructors, and I created a bar instructor training program because there just weren't any bar instructors in the UK. I had to find and train my own instructors. Eventually leave that marriage. So just as I was turning 40, so we'd been together for 20 years.
Wow.
That was a huge, really a catalyst in terms of my journey from there.
Yeah.
So that was only 6 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And I kind of think about all the things that I've done in that 6 year period and can't quite believe that I was that person before.
Yeah. I'd love to talk more about all this. Cause I also left a marriage. And when I actually left twice, you know, like we tried to, cause we have a daughter. So we tried to reconcile, didn't work. And for me, how long has it been? It's been 5 years since then. And the amount that the business is just, and I had this sense of like, oh, my business is going to skyrocket when I, get out from under the negativity that was around me. But what was it? Like you said, your marriage was limiting and coercive. Like, can you just unpack that a little bit? So we know what you were dealing with and then how big a deal it was to leave.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, these things can be very subtle and they can build over a period of time. And I think, you know, I think I have my own theory on why he was that way. And increasingly became more controlling. I'm not going to share that now because it is quite personal. Yeah, but,
for sure.
You know, I think we can end up, I mean, it was a really long-term relationship, 20 years. You know, I met him when I was 19.
Yeah, that's young.
And, you know, you can almost kind of create your own little island together in life and, you know, your own language and your own references and your own behaviors that, you know, when you look back with perspective, you realize are not okay. You know, and there were lots of aspects of the situation that I allowed to happen. So there's that as well. But, you know, I didn't have my own bank account, for example. It wasn't considered that I would be capable of having my own bank account. And it wasn't until maybe a year or so after I left that marriage that I went to Waterloo Station here in London. It's a huge kind of station concourse. And there was a massive outdoor poster mm-hmm. about financial control. And I remember standing underneath it thinking, I didn't know that was a thing.
Right.
Like that was my situation.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of these things can be really insidious and really subtle. And not necessarily even kind of malicious, you know, it's a situation that can build. And of course, when we met, I was not this like physically strong, empowered woman that I am now. And I think that became, I'm not making any apologies for him, but that became quite emasculating probably. And, mm-hmm. You know, as that sort of element of control tightened, I at the same time was becoming more emotionally and mentally empowered because of the physical strength that I'd gained. You know, I think the two things are so tightly interlinked. Mm-hmm. And I just started questioning more and more things. And, you know, I have always been a bit of a rebel. So if someone says you can't do something a certain way, I'll be like, okay, watch me. But, you know, so as that confidence grew, I think I just started in my mind at least to start questioning things like, well, you know, I keep hearing that I will be nothing on my own, that I wouldn't have a clue how to live and cope on my own, let alone run my business. And I'm starting to think, well, how hard can it be? Right. And which sounds really ridiculous, almost kind of embarrassing or shameful to admit now, mm-hmm. as a grown adult. But mm-hmm. You know, that is that you can believe stuff in life that is just part of your environment for a really long time. It's part of the foundations of your life, and just kind of go along with it. And I just thank God that I had that kind of epiphany moment, yeah. where, you know, I just sat there and thought, I'm about to be 40. Is this how am I going to live the rest of my life? This exact same, is this going to be a repeat?
Yeah. Well, and sometimes as women, I think that we also receive a cultural narrative that we're less capable in some ways. And finances is definitely one of them. The physical mm. side is definitely mm. another one. Mm. So I think there's not necessarily just one voice of like an important person in our life that can affect that, but also it's cultural support. So,
and also, mm-hmm. you know, how you're brought up, and my childhood definitely conditioned me mm. for being in that kind of relationship. And again, not in a malicious or intentional way, but just because, you know, I grew up in quite a gendered household. I didn't have strong female role models in my life. You know, it was just this notion that men probably know better. Mm-hmm. And if that's sort of the undercurrent to your life, then, you know, from a very young age, that becomes your belief system. I'm just so grateful that, you know, at a certain point, I kind of decided to challenge that. Be like, that's utterly ridiculous. You know, I mean, even through my divorce, there were times when I was asking my dad for advice. And I don't want to discredit my dad, but he said, well, maybe you should ask your ex-husband what he thinks. Well, I'm like, oh, I think we're past that.
Yeah.
Also, you know that I've rowed an ocean, Dad, and I am, you know, running my own business and doing just fine. So, great. I mean, you know, it's not just an individual thing, it's a generational thing. And, you know, these, thankfully, a lot of these beliefs and values are now being challenged and changed. And that can only be a good thing. But, so, you know, and actually, funny you say that about your business, but I left my ex-husband in the November, and in the following January, my revenue had skyrocketed.
Wow.
It was honestly, I mean, threefold in 1 month. And it was just incredible. And part of that was kind of, you know, necessity drives you to do incredible things sometimes. But it was a real demonstration of what my potential was, and a real, you know, two fingers up to what I'd left behind. And, you know, I just kind of started gaining momentum from there, and believing in myself just a little bit more every day. I had great friends around me, and, you know, not one of them has ever said, I told you so, or I, you know, God, I wish I could have talked to you about this, or, you know, they were all just incredibly supportive, but they all believed a lot more in my potential than I did, and were hugely encouraging of me. You know, when I applied to do the SAS Who Dares Wins program.
Right. So this is, can you just let us know what, I'm vaguely familiar with it, but what is that?
So it's, I'm sure you probably have similar programs in the US. So it's basically a televised replication of Special Forces selection process. So it's taking 24 civilians through, you know, essentially like the I guess the kind of Marines, Navy SEALs kind of equivalent training, and, you know, is an elimination process. So either you are pulling yourself out of the situation because you can't deal with it anymore, or they're pulling you out of it. And there is, you know, a whole series of physical, mental tasks that you have to undertake, fears that you have to face. And, you know, essentially you are competing with other people to kind of get as far through that process as you can.
Is that the one with where there's a line that you say if you're out of, if you want to be out of the show, like you say something and then you're done?
Yeah, well, you basically say I want to VW, which means voluntarily withdraw.
Right.
So this was the first year. So this show had run for 3 years, mm-hmm. but only for men.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Obviously.
Why am I surprised?
And of course, did anyone really think that that was particularly absurd? No, we just went along with it.
Just like, fine, that makes sense. Yeah,
I mean, it's just how it is. This is kind of my point. You know, we accept things that are just part of like, you know, how life is. And
that's only a couple years ago, right? Like, isn't like 20, 30, 40 years ago.
It's bizarre, isn't it? So they announced that women were going to be allowed to apply. And I think I shared that on my Instagram. And then I was just flooded with messages from people saying, well, are you going to apply then? And I was like, no, that wasn't, that wasn't my point. I was just celebrating the fact that, you know, this should have happened a long time ago.
Yeah.
Anyway, they wouldn't let up. So I did apply, sort of just to shut them up, really. And then I found myself in South America, in Chile, in the Andes. and got through 11 days of fairly brutal physical and mental exertion. Yeah.
I saw a clip of you going from like through ice holes, that was from the show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where it's like, just for our audience, it's like almost like a solid, I don't know.
So it's a frozen lake.
And then you're like popping up holes in these ice holes between and going under the ice. Oh my goodness. I'll let you tell the story.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty horrible. And actually, while that one looks really dramatic, mm-hmm. I have a fear of water, mm-hmm. which we'll come on to talking about when we discuss the fact that I rode across the Pacific Ocean. So I wasn't looking forward to that particular exercise, but that one was over quite quickly. But, you know, there were long, long expeditions, you know, up into the mountains. We had to kind of make snow holes and, you know, we had to, I mean, cross ravines on ladders and, you know, forward abseil down cliff faces. And it was just like, it was relentless. There's constantly stuff being thrown at you. Mm-hmm. And it never stops. So that was, in a way, I remember thinking at one point that I didn't know if I could continue because I couldn't deal with just that continuous anxiety that was just building up.
Right.
And, you know, you had occasional moments to kind of sit down and catch your breath. And they were almost the worst times because the anticipation of that rest being broken, which it could be at absolutely any time of the day or night, uh-huh. was so great that it was just causing huge stress and, you know, just cortisol raging around my body. And, but, you know, you kind of, yeah, I guess that was a real breakthrough for me. It was quite life-changing in many ways. And it was evidence around me that I was more capable than I gave myself credit for. I went into it with a lot of self-doubt and, you know, having believed this narrative about myself and knowing that I was physically capable, but not really having that emotional resilience really. And then suddenly you start seeing, you know, you're competing with men mm-hmm. and you start seeing some of these guys who are not able to continue mm-hmm. and you think, well, hang on, I'm carrying the same weight as this dude. And I thought he was super fit and strong, twice my size, maybe, you know, mm-hmm. And then you start to build the confidence because, you know, the evidence is undeniable. So that was a really critical moment in my journey. And I loved it. I'd do it again in a second. I made some really good friends. You bond very quickly with people in that kind of situation. And it was brilliant. And then I came out of that and was doing a press promotion event. And someone asked me if I wanted to row an ocean. And I was just in this place where I was like, just say yes to things, say yes to anything. Like I had no one to go back and ask permission from.
Right.
And that was like, just, it sounds ridiculous, but that was hugely liberating. I was like, I can do whatever. Can I swear? I can do whatever the fuck I want. Mm-hmm. Like, this is my life. It was an amazing feeling. And because I had this fear of water, which had come from a near drowning incident I had when I was a child, I was like, this is my opportunity to deal with that, to like right. stop avoiding things in life that are uncomfortable. And this is the thing in my life that I probably avoid the most. Wow.
As we head into summer, rest and recovery are critical for improving sports performance, reducing stress, and living a long and healthy life. We should all invest in better sleep. So, think about the thing you lay your head on for 8 hours a night. If it's not exactly right for you, it can lead to needless tossing and turning, or worse, have you waking up with an unrelenting kink in your neck. My new Lagoon pillow has helped me improve my sleep immensely by pairing me with the performance pillow that has everything I need. So I personally was matched with the Otter pillow. Shout out to Team Otter, which I love because it has a gentle cooling effect. And I was able to choose how much stuffing I wanted in it, which is super important to me because I'm doing a decent amount of CrossFit these days and my shoulders are kind of creaky. So having a pillow that is stuffed just to the right height keeps my neck and head in exactly the right position and comfortable for the entire night. And as of fall 2023, Lagoon launched their 100% mulberry silk pillowcases. It's cool to the touch, buttery soft, and great for your skin and hair. You've got to go check out this pillowcase if you want to feel great and look great every morning. Waking up for morning workouts has never felt better. I'm refreshed and pain-free thanks to my Lagoon pillow. To check it out for yourself, go to lagoonsleep.com/performance and take the 2-minute sleep quiz to find your perfect pillow match. And then use the code PERFORMANCE for 15% off your first purchase. That's code PERFORMANCE at lagoonsleep.com/performance, whole 15% off, and the link is in the show notes. You can just click through there.
So you were scared, because I'm not scared of water, but I would be scared to row across an ocean, right? So to come from a place where you actually have a fear of water that's based on a lived experience, like that's, how did you overcome that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I knew that saying yes to that would mean I would have to go into a proper thorough process of like confronting that fear. And I did open water swim coaching. I did cognitive behavioral therapy to try and really unpack what that fear actually was. And you know, because I'm a strong athletic person, I can tread water for a really long time. I'm actually not a bad swimmer, but if I get into my head that I'm out of my depth and I can't get to the side, I will panic and it completely takes over all my thinking.
And the ocean has no sides, right?
Like right, exactly. So I did a lot of work on that. I mean, the truth is I never got off the boat into the water. So I don't know whether that fear is, I don't actually think fears are ever conquered, really. I think we just learn how to manage them. But the thing that I was most afraid of was that I would become really overwhelmed by, you know, your horizon is just ocean. There's nothing else that you can see. And I didn't want to become overwhelmed and start making poor decisions and panicking. And
did you at all become overwhelmed?
No. And it's amazing what you can adapt to.
Yeah.
We're so adaptable. Uh-huh. I really thought when I lose sight of land is when I'll start freaking out, and by then it's too late, and then it starts to kind of escalate, you know, and you sort of just can't stop thinking about the thing you're trying not to think about. But I adapted to that. There were a few other issues. I was seasick, very, very badly seasick for 23 days. And the team dynamic was really, really bad.
Oh no. How many people were on your team?
We were 3 women.
Okay.
And actually I'd meant to do the row in 2020 with 2 other women who I knew, and it was postponed because of COVID.
Right.
So because they couldn't defer their place, but we had the boat and we had all of our corporate sponsorship in place. I had to find new teammates, and you know, for various different reasons, COVID and a global lockdown being a fairly significant one. We weren't in a position to put in place the necessary team structures to spend time together. I didn't even meet one of the girls until we got to San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
So
where was the crossing from to?
From San Francisco to Hawaii.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
So 4,000 kilometers.
Right.
Which took only 60 days.
How big is the boat?
24 feet.
Wow. That's amazing. And are you on a sleeping and eating schedule?
Yeah. So we rowed either 3 hours on, 3 hours off, or 4 hours on, 2 hours off. In that 3 hours off, I mean, you don't sleep for 3 hours. You sleep for maybe one if you're lucky.
Right.
You've got to eat, you've got to poop, you've got to navigate, you've got to do various bits of like boat maintenance, self-maintenance, personal hygiene, salt water eats your skin. Mm-hmm. So you've got to kind of wash your skin after every single shift. It was a pretty full on. In fact, rowing, honestly, was probably the easiest part of it.
Right.
And that's saying something. Yeah.
And so how did your team do in the race?
There were only three boats in the race.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the other two was four men, and the other was four women.
Right.
And they were both in different types of boats to ours. Right. So
you were alone in your class.
Right. And we were also, I don't know quite why we chose this, but we chose the most pure type of ocean rowing boat. So most ocean rowing boats have an auto helm where you can program in the bearing. Mm-hmm. Ours had a foot plate. There were absolutely no mechanical advantages in terms of, some of the boats have like a really high cabin that acts like a sail, basically. So you fly along in the right conditions. Ours didn't have that. So it was like pure grit. It was literally like Hawaii the hard way. We were chasing an existing world record. So there was only one team of three women who'd ever done it before. They set the record of 62 days.
Mm-hmm, right.
So we beat that by
2 days. So you got
it. Yeah, only just. I mean, there were times we thought we wouldn't, but we did. So,
wow.
Yeah. So that was quite the experience. And it was a really difficult experience for me. It's very isolating. The two girls that I was rowing with were already friends.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how they came to be part of the team. And mm-hmm. There were some quite extraordinary behaviors playing out on that boat. It destroyed my faith in teamwork a bit, if I'm honest, and in women. Which was really sad.
Yeah.
And we were obviously doing, so I'm an ambassador for an international charity called Inspiring Girls.
Uh-huh.
And so we were out there, flying the flag for women, doing amazing things, female role models, inspiring young girls to be whoever they want to be. There were a lot of like behaviors playing out on that boat that were not consistent with those values. And I found that really, really, really tough.
Right.
So it took a long time to, it's one of those kind of bittersweet things. It was that we achieved something incredible together. That's the world record on the wall behind me.
Oh, cool.
Me.
Right.
It really was an extraordinary experience of like grit and determination and resilience. And, I don't know how you can not eat for 23 days and row 12 to 16 hours. Each day.
Wow. What do you mean by not eat? Like,
well, so because I was so seasick, I literally couldn't keep a thing down.
Yeah.
I was on every single form of medication.
Yeah.
Had the patches. I had like a relief band on my wrist. I couldn't keep anything down. So we're eating dehydrated food, like expedition foods. Mm-hmm. I couldn't keep those down. We had snacks, couldn't keep my snacks down, could barely keep water down at times. And I think, I must have absorbed some of it,
mm-hmm.
but, I was pretty much bringing a single thing up that I tried to put inside me. So, the rowing actually made me feel better. So that was like my incentive because, seasickness is like an inner ear balance thing, isn't it? So it's kind of being outside in the fresh air, you know, trying to keep an eye on the horizon to stabilize, that made me feel better. So
yeah, and I can see how it would ground you to have that control with the paddles a little bit on the water.
Yeah.
I'm curious, like, has your faith in women and women's dynamics on teams been restored?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So I kind of, after I did the row, it took me a really long time to decompress, to kind of make sense of a lot of the behaviors that I was exposed to and try to understand. And I think one of the biggest things that I learned is that sometimes you have to give yourself closure. Sometimes you're just never going to understand other people's behaviors.
Right.
And, you know, but I did, I sort of wanted to put things right in the sense that my ambition going into that endeavor, and it was something that I'd worked on for 3 years. So it's a really long, you know, build up to it. You know, we raised so much money for charity, mm-hmm. and we got the world record, and I just wanted it to be that we would end up as friends, and that, you know, I created two new friendships out of complete strangers, and that we would forever have that incredible memory together. And I spent a long time like really struggling with that not being the case, you know, and you've been through an extraordinary experience. You come home and everybody else is still living the same life that they were before you left. And you're like, no, but like my world has changed. Like my perspective has changed, and you don't have anyone to kind of share that with, really.
Yeah.
That's quite tough, but about 6 months after I came back from the row, I decided I had to kind of lean into that avoidance, that sort of temptation to just avoid being in a team situation again. And so I asked a friend if she would run across the Arctic with me. So
that's
what
I was going to ask about next. And that's quite a, like, all of your adventures, this is one thread that really stood out to me, is like, they're like, you're not just one type of adventurer, right? It's like one day it's rowing and then you're in the Arctic and then you're doing
well,
a
because
TV show.
The truth is, I'm not any kind of adventurer. I didn't grow up playing a particular sport. I didn't grow up thinking I want to row across the Pacific. I didn't grow up thinking any of this stuff. So it's all, I'm like a kid in a sweet shop, really. But I've also been in lots of different environments, you know, ballet being one, actually, the rowing community being another, cycling community can also be quite closed off.
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, CrossFit, we were chatting about CrossFit earlier.
Yeah.
And much as these communities can be incredibly like energy giving, you know, my CrossFit family are amazing. I love them, but sometimes it can be really closed off as well, and you can kind of go into those environments as a real underdog.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of learned to love that. I'm like, oh, go on, underestimate me.
Right.
Like, we'll just see. Mm-hmm. And I think that so often is what puts people off, particularly women, I think, particularly in sports environments, you know, going into gyms and just feeling okay with like picking up whatever weight and doing whatever you want to do on the gym floor. Like, a lot of women really struggle with that. So I guess I kind of want to show that you can do anything from a base of nothing if you put your mind to it. And, you know, that you don't always have to have been doing a thing in order to do the thing.
Right.
I wasn't
right.
a rower before I rowed across the Pacific. I'm not a cyclist yet. I'm about to the race across America. You know, I'm not a runner, and I've done two huge ultra marathons, 250 kilometer distances, one in the Arctic, one in Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like to just find new things to test my capabilities, to show other people that anything's possible. But also, there's a huge joy and privilege in experiencing new things and learning new skills and meeting new people and going into environments that you would never have gone into. You know, they're the things that I hope at the end of my life, I reflect on and think what a huge privilege that was.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, you have to seek them out. They don't just fall on your lap.
Endurance sports should be accessible to everyone, right? That's why we are so excited to be partnering with Motive. Motive is one of the fastest growing training apps in the world today, with thousands of amateur athletes signing up every month and a nearly perfect 4.9 star rating in the App Store. You are not a template and your training plan should not be either. Prepare for running races, triathlons, cycling events, duathlons, or swim runs, however your season schedule shapes up, and get training written by some of the best coaches in the world in each discipline who know what it takes to help amateur athletes reach their goal on race day. The app takes the training written by those experts and then creates the most optimal training plan for your schedule, abilities, and goals. Plus, the training is fully customized to your race schedule. How much you can train each week, your current abilities, and the goals you want to achieve in your race. You can use the app for free as long as you want, or get all the upgraded features from the app for just $19.99 a month. But as a Feisty listener, you can sign up at mymotive.com and use the code FEISTY for 2 months of full premium access. That's right, you get 2 months of premium for free. So you quite literally have nothing to lose. So head over to mymotive.com, mymotive.com, and use the code FEISTY, FEISTY. And on a personal note, I know the founder of Motive, and he is driven to make triathlon and all endurance sports more accessible for the athletes who care about their performance, but who aren't quite ready for a full-time personal coach. If that sounds like you, definitely try the app for 2 months for free. You literally have nothing to lose. For decades, running shoes have been researched, tested, and designed for men. Brands have relied on the shrink it and pink it approach to sell male shoes to female customers. That's why we are so excited to be working with Hedas. Hedas designs athletic footwear for women that elevates performance, safety, and style. Hedas unlocks the science behind women's biomechanics through dedicated research, creates better shoes for women that support their longevity and performance, and establishes new design standards to promote transparency in a male-biased industry. Hedas have a lower ankle collar to reduce rubbing, a breathable mesh toe box to allow for ventilation and to allow for female toe shape, a special kind of plate in the midsole to keep tired legs going, a narrow heel cup to reduce heel slippage and take the pressure off our Achilles, and a rounded instep to create a snug fit. Hedas has three shoe models designed for different sessions: the Alma Cruise for long runs, the Alma Tempo for training days, and the Alma Speed for pushing the pace. I've personally been running in the Alma Cruise and I love them. It's the shoe I always wanted and never knew I needed. The fit is perfect in every way. You can get your own pair of Hedas at hedas.com and use the code FEISTY20 for 20% off. That's FEISTY20 at hedas.com and it will all be in the show notes.
I'm curious, I am curious about the 5-day race across the Arctic, because that's like, it's kind of mind blowing to me. I'm someone who I really struggle with cold. Right. Mm. And I think a lot of women do. Like, I definitely find myself getting cold more easily than other people around me. And how did you prepare for that?
Well, I mean, you'd laugh. So we didn't go anywhere cold. So the Arctic is Arctic Sweden, and it was about minus 35 at its lowest temperature. Yeah. Obviously, you know, blizzards, and it's not kind of, it can be bright blue skies and sunshine, but then suddenly you'll be faced with a blizzard. You know, we did a lot of like running in the fairly kind of cold, damp, rainy UK weather. Mm-hmm. but not comparable. We took our, so you run on ski shoes. They're like sort of athletic ski shoes, really lightweight. And we took them to Hyde Park in London, where there are like horse tracks, like sandy horse tracks. And we ran on that to test them out. I think we did it for like about half an hour one Friday afternoon. And we were like, yeah,
that was it. You're fine. Like, ready to go.
Be fine.
What could go wrong? Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, I think that's the gift in a way that the row has given me, is like, nothing will ever be as hard as that. Nothing will ever be as long as that. And I will never be so isolated and lonely and homesick and, you know, in such physical decline for so long.
Right.
So everything else is like, we can do this. This is okay.
It's really interesting. Yeah. As you're talking, you're like, oh, I think what you gained, and you can tell me, but like, it's partially about being able to trust yourself to problem solve. Right. So like, as you're telling that story about testing the shoes for half an hour in a different environment, like, yes. And like you would, when you're out there, you're like, oh, well, if something goes wrong with the shoes or I need to do something differently, et cetera, like you'd learned to trust yourself. Would you say that that's true? And how do you think that you learned that?
That's so perceptive. In fact, I'm writing a book at the moment, and the title is Other People Are Like the Weather. And the idea being that when you think you're completely alone and you have nothing else and no one else to rely on, that you can rely on yourself. Like, that is the absolute goal. Mm-hmm. It's the power of self-reliance. It's drawing on your inner resources at times when you need to. It's not about, precluding relationships with other people. It's not to say live your life in isolation, but it's about being in the driving seat of your life, fending for yourself, and being able to rely on your capabilities. So that is hugely empowering.
Yeah, I love the analogy with the weather, because like other people, like they can be a bright sunny day.
Yeah, right,
to or they can be
they can be a shitstorm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So exactly. But it's like the idea is, you know, okay, well, let them be whatever kind of weather pattern they are, and they might settle, they might be fleeting in your life. But if you have a really strong sense of who you are and you know what trajectory of life you want to be on, then you stay on that path and you remain yourself.
Sorry, it's amazing that like what you know, because I was going to ask about mental toughness, and we think about discipline and that kind of internal motivation. I think that those are the things we go to when we're thinking about someone like yourself who does long races across the Arctic or days of weeks and months of rowing. And yet the book that you wanted to write coming out of that was about trusting yourself and understanding other people better, or letting them be themselves, which like, I'm like, oh yeah, that does completely make sense as a way to.
Well, because what I think what I've realized is that I think most people, when they meet me or hear my story or hear me speak, might think that the hardest things I've ever done are to row an ocean or get through SAS interrogation or survive in the Arctic. But actually the hardest things I've ever had to deal with a difficult relationships with other people. And that's something that everybody has to deal with at some point in their life. And, you know, really what that comes down to is, well, what can you control? You can only control your own thoughts and your own actions.
Yeah.
You can't control anything outside of that, really. You can perhaps influence it, but you can't control it. So kind of keep your focus on who you are, like know who you are as well, know what you stand for and what your purpose is. And that's incredibly life-giving to actually sit down and properly think about that. Like, my purpose is to be the person I needed growing up. And that guides me every decision that I make, you know, what's the next adventure I'm going to take. And, you know, what is my story? What message do I want to kind of get out there and leave as my legacy? I don't have children of my own. So what do I leave behind? You know, and hopefully it is a demonstration that, well, lots of things, you know, it's never too late in your life to make choices, to change direction. And, you know, that you already have everything inside you that you need to thrive in life. So draw on that, like learn to love yourself, learn what's inside of you and what you're capable of, and Choose discomfort every now and again, because that's when you really find out who you are.
Absolutely. And you do high performance coaching. Is it on a one-on-one basis?
So mostly it's the kind of corporate leadership teams. Mm. I do one-on-one mentorship and coaching. I do lots of keynotes that often then turns into a longer term relationship and kind of continued delivery of different workshops, and that mostly kind of come under the banner of high performance in some way or other. That's either kind of about team play, team behaviors, or resilience or vulnerability, psychological safety. So lots of different aspects.
Yeah. Is there anything in particular or something that we could leave our audience with that's like a tool or something that they could use in their life like today?
I think I learned a lot, certainly on the row, mm-hmm. about processing and letting go of emotions. So, I spent a really long time, probably about 45 or so days, trying to fix the situation, trying to remain optimistic, trying to, I guess, adjust my behaviors myself to kind of keep peace. Like, the truth is, on a 24-foot boat in the middle of an ocean, you can't allow conflict to escalate. Mm-hmm. And, we were on the brink of that a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And one of the worst aspects of that for me as the one in the team of three was almost losing my sense of perspective over what was acceptable and not acceptable in terms of behaviors. So because I had to accept and tolerate poor behavior,
well, you're kind of your own country at that point.
Yeah,
like, there's totally. There's no one to Absolutely. Manage you or govern, or like, it just is the three of you out on the ocean. Like, I can see how that could get unruly.
And I even remember one of them saying to me, well, it's worse for you, Vic. At least we've got each other. So, they were very well aware of what the impact of all of that was on me. And, that was incredibly isolating. And I think, it kind of pushed my buttons from my childhood, where I, mm-hmm. Felt quite isolated growing up. And again, in my marriage, and, none of that was their fault, that those foundations kind of existed. But, it's kind of having that like self-awareness, really understand yourself, understand where your emotional boundaries are. Mm-hmm. Give yourself permission then to feel the inevitable chemical responses that are our emotions. Our emotions are not just kind of sort of abstract responses. They're chemicals.
Yeah.
They're physical markers in our bodies. It doesn't serve you to ignore, to flatten them. You have to sit with those emotions for even a short period of time. And there were times on the boat when, I did feel so unbelievably alone that I would actually force myself to relive happy memories in tiny, minute details. So I was literally changing my emotional state. I was forcing myself to smile in what was an intolerable atmosphere, really. And letting those emotions go before they consumed me, because you can't exist in a state of sort of negative rumination for that kind of period of time. You have to learn to like process, let go, process, let go, process,
yes.
let go.
The fact that you're learning that in real time on a rowboat in the middle of the ocean is wild. Yeah, I think the best way to like disempower an emotion is to feel it, right? Yeah. Like so it doesn't have, when I say disempower, I mean like, so it doesn't have control over you.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And I think, and how old were you at that time when you were on the rowboat?
Oh, that was like 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Yeah. It's just something 41. That I feel. Yeah. Like a lot of folks never learn that, or learn it on a longer scale. Than,
or never have the need, obviously that was a really extreme environment. And when I speak, I my main goal is to be relatable. I know I've done extraordinary things, but I've also lived an ordinary life in many respects as well. So I understand that, we can be in emotionally difficult situations that mean there's no quick or easy way out. And that doesn't have to be on a boat in the middle of an ocean. It can be in a work environment. It can be in a relationship. You know, there can be lots of other factors that mm-hmm. make it a really difficult decision to just go, do you know what? I don't think I want to be here anymore. So I think the thing that I always like to make clear is that I call this emotional endurance. And we talk a lot about physical endurance, mental endurance, but emotional endurance, so what's that? And it's not about just shutting out your feelings. It is about understanding them, processing them, giving yourself permission to feel them, then letting go of them. And it's also not to say that we should just tolerate emotionally damaging situations, but that sometimes there just is no way out, not immediately anyway. And you have to kind of adopt strategies to be able to get through it. Mm-hmm. And there were other days when I would like set my intentions. So I'd be like, I'd use like extreme positivity as a sort of self-protective shield. So I think, well, whatever they throw at me today, I am just going to come out of my cabin with the biggest smile on my face and nothing's going to bother me, you know. But you can only maintain that for a certain amount of time. And then other mm-hmm. times I would wait until it was my shift. So on a 3 hour on, 3 hour off shift rotation, you'd do an hour with each other person and an hour on your own. And sometimes you get then that hour in the middle of the night in the dark mm-hmm. on your own in the middle of an ocean. Right. With your teammates asleep in the cabin.
Sleeping, yeah.
And I love that hour. That was my favorite hour. And sometimes I'd just sit there with tears pouring down my face, just letting it out, because I knew it was the only way that I was going to get through it. And it was a healthy thing to do. So I think, like, if you can learn the skill of managing your emotions and regaining perspective and processing feelings in order to kind of reset and go again, that's a really great resource to have at your fingertips. Well,
that's how anything becomes possible.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
In a way.
You know? It really is. I think, you can do almost anything if you can learn that skill, but it is a skill and you have to practice it, and it's a bit like fear. You know, you don't just suddenly master it and that's it for the rest of your life. You know, life throws stuff at us all the time. You just got to keep kind of practicing and keep kind of retaining perspective and finding techniques to do that. So,
yeah. Well, I think that's a great place to end. This has been an incredible conversation. I've barely looked at my notes and I've learned a ton. I'm already thinking who I'm going to share this podcast with when we put it out. So thank you so much, Vicky. I want to ask about RAM though.
Yes, when is of course.
It?
Yeah,
when
please.
Is it? How can we follow you along on this journey?
So my next adventure is the Race Across America, which is, of course, the whole reason I'm speaking to you, obviously. We're a team of four women, two in the UK, two in the US, and we are called For the Record. Our intention is to beat the all-female four existing record, which is 6 days, 15 hours, I think. So it's pretty punchy.
Okay.
Please follow our journey on social media. We're on Instagram, For the Record_. ForTheRecord.co.uk is our website as well. So, you know, we are still working hard on lots of elements of that campaign. People keep saying, well, how's the training going? And you're like, God, if that was the only thing that we had to focus on, that would be amazing.
Right. Are there other things that you need or we can help with?
Yeah. I mean, we still are hoping to get more corporate sponsors on board. We're doing pretty well. We've got a headline sponsor, a big tech multinational called Avanade, who are owned by Microsoft and Accenture. So they have really like got us on our way, but we do need more. You know, there's a lot involved, a lot of logistics, as you might know, with RVs mm-hmm. and follow vehicles, and let alone all of the kit and the mechanicals required and the food, and mm-hmm. we'll have 12 crew with us. So it's a big old endeavor. So we definitely got a budget deficit sat there right at the moment that we need to plug. So if anyone would like to support, we'd be super grateful. But otherwise just kind of follow the journey and hopefully we'll get it done.
Mm-hmm.
In record
I'm sure
time.
You will. That's great. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. This has been great, and we look forward to following your next adventures.
Thank you for having me. It's been such a great chat.